we have taken for granted internally what we know to be true about the industry, but we have not done a great job in communicating that to the consumer. And so this is an opportunity for us to communicate that.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Business of Homes podcast, where we dig into not only the entrepreneurship, but the business side of real estate. And I want to invite you guys to listen in close today because I have a friend of mine, Kevin Wilson, who I have known for a number of years in real estate and who has navigated probably all parts and pieces and now plays a big role in local leadership here in Middle Tennessee. And I'm really excited to have him because I feel like he brings an incredible balance of that everyday real estate agent perspective with someone who now sees some of the stuff that goes on behind the curtains. And so thank you, Kevin, for being here. I'm excited to learn more about your journey. So we both have been in real estate for a while, and for at least the beginning part of my journey, maybe yours too, there was nothing overly special about the day-to-day. You know, we were just out there, we're working on transactions, and we're sort of gaining that needed experience. But I know that you've kind of been changing and kind of going to new places recently, but I also want to know, well, how did you get to the part where we even met each other just doing the day-to-day transactions? Where did you come from that led you here?
Yeah. So my story is not a story of being in a family that owns a real estate company. This was not the plan. When I graduated high school and started thinking about college or whatever was next. And so I have to say that I fell into real estate accidentally. My first career was the United States Navy. I was in the military for 6 years. From there, went to college, was at the University of San Diego in California, and then finally graduated many years later here in at Belmont University. Here in Nashville. But for 13 years prior to real estate, I was in boutique and big box retail management.
Oh, man.
And so a lot of customer service skills that were really pressed upon me and formed that level of service over the course of those years that really were very transferable to real estate, as well as, you know, the discipline that you learn in the military was also transferable to what I do now. So
I love that. I love it. And I also love those that have taken the long way around in the academic world. That was my story too. And so I always appreciate not only the fact that failure is a part of everyday life, but also failure doesn't exist if you keep coming around the block for more. And so I love that.
Yeah, it's definitely a part of my story. I was in my 40s when I graduated with my bachelor's degree.
I love that.
And
that's good. So. That's a good reminder that none of us are too far out of any of the games to pick yourself back up and keep going. And I feel like I need to start keeping some sort of tally, or maybe some sort of like for our video watching audience, like a dollar sign with tally marks by it. For every time I hear someone tell me that they fell in or accidentally got into real estate, it's the best wormhole, I'm convinced of it, or on ramp into real estate, because there is no obvious feeder. You know, it's very rare to have anyone get degrees in it. And like you said about the families, it's rare to have that early experience, unless you're just, I guess, I don't know, just clued in somehow like I wasn't. But that becomes why the real estate industry has this incredibly wide range of different ways that people practice, because they're feeding in all this past experience. So that military background of keeping things very organized and regimented and working as a team, but also that retail background of having customer first. I'm sure that blend, very unique as it is, gave you a leg up in some ways, because man, discipline, when you're starting out in real estate, definitely one of the hardest things.
Absolutely. You know, real estate, you're a 1099. You're basically self-employed.
Right.
You hang your license with a brokerage. But I think that the mistake that a lot of us make, including me in my early years, is I treat it like a W-2 position. I treat it like it's just a 40-hour work week, come clock in, come clock out. But the benefit is that I only clock in and clock out when I want to. And there has to be, at least for me, there had to be a mind shift somewhere there that says, okay, yes, my license is with a brokerage and I work under a broker, but I am my own business owner. And I have to learn disciplines and make decisions based on being a business owner. For example, you know, when I get a commission check, that entire commission check is not mine. A part of it is the brokerage. A part of it goes toward taxes. A part of it goes to business expenses. And so what I learned it was later in my career, is that I pay myself a salary every month so that it's consistent income. And if the commissions outweigh the salary that I have, that goes into the business account, which in turn goes back into the business.
Yeah. So this is great information for any new listeners here or anyone who's a little off the rails, that in some ways your commission check should never hit your bank account first. They almost need to very much go into like an operating account or a business account. And you'll see this in some of the more finely tuned areas of financial planning and financial management. Those that are helping, manage someone to have good sort of interactions with money will start any money that you're getting from a job or a business or an investment, and it'll go into an account that you largely can't touch or don't touch.
Right.
And then from there, you pay all your expenses. Maybe you have like what would be traditionally considered like a cost of goods sold. So that would be like a brokerage takes that money off the top. Heck, even Uncle Sam, you know, that money has to be set aside. I had a tax account. Literally, I opened another bank account at the bank and I called it taxes, and I would take 30% of whatever dollars were paid to me, and I would just put it in there and it would just stock up, and then I'd pay it out. And I later learned that there's some better, more simpler ways to deal with that. But ultimately it was a helpful, almost simpleton way for me to remember that all that money coming in isn't just mine.
Right. Right. And, you know, other important lessons that I've learned there is that those taxes need to be paid quarterly, that I don't need to wait until the end of the year and then try to scramble for this big chunk of money that I owe. And that has been, really life-changing for me in being able to put that into practice. And when you first start, yes, it seems like it's a lot of money every quarter, but over time, you realize that money's going to be gone, and it's not yours to spend. And right. So you get used to it. It's just like funding an investment account.
Yeah.
Like if I fund an investment account with the same amount of money every month, then over time, I don't even miss that money.
Right. This is business 101. I love this. I'm so glad you brought this up, because I'm not sure this is being taught right alongside those real estate classes, which is a total shame, because you're right. It feels like every packet that you buy that's like real estate 101 should be emblazoned with you're starting a business, not a profession. You know, because it does feel like it's exciting. I'm getting into something new. I'm going to have this new identity. I'm going to be doing these new actions. But it's like, hold on now, you're starting a business. Do you have the proper financial and legal sort of setup to make success? And those quarterly payments for taxes is very familiar to much of the business world, and it needs to be more familiar to real estate. So that's really great. And if you pay those out of your operating account, I mean, and depending on the amount of money that's bringing in, Uncle Sam wants his piece and wants it on a frequent basis. And it's not only just psychological, it's practical, because it's very frustrating to have to come up with big sums of money. It's much easier to be paying it a little bit over time.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned something interesting that I want to touch on, because it's so normal for agents who are getting in to be getting your affiliate broker license and then hanging it under a broker's license. But if you really stand back for a second and don't just think to yourself, well, obviously A goes to B, but maybe why A goes to B? Do you feel like in 2024 that brokers are providing the proper amount of transactional value for warranting this sort of two license world we live in? You know, you got the broker license, you got the affiliate broker license. in some ways, people, consumers, they don't know the difference between these things. And sometimes regular agents don't know the difference between these things. And so are brokers still providing that 10, 20, 30% worth of value where that broker fee comes off the top?
Absolutely. I think that there are full service brokerages out there that do a really great job in providing and earning the income that they receive from their agents. I have always been a part of a brokerage where I could have certainly gone somewhere else and paid less to that brokerage. But I got the value. I saw the value in being where I was at. I will also say that there are lots of different levels of brokerage as far as what services are provided. And so if you are, there's something out there for everybody. It is just like the commission structure to the consumer that might be wanting to list their house or maybe wanting to buy their house. We hear a lot in the recent media about the settlement and the different fee structures, except we don't hear a lot about the different fee structures. We hear about one fee structure.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's important for consumers to know that there are lots of different brokerage models out there. Some of them are flat fee brokerage models. Some of them are full service brokerage models. And commissions are negotiable, right? And they've always been negotiable. I think you see the same thing from the internal side of the of the brokerage, where certain brokerages just provide a higher level of service and culture than others to their client, which is the realtor, right? But if you don't want that service, or you want to go with a simpler brokerage or a less expensive brokerage, that's available to you too. And so it very much reflects the external consumer's option in the internal world of real estate.
This is really great because we're so familiar in other areas of our life with different options, different levels of service, maybe something that's more turnkey or more concierge or something that's a little bit more a la carte. This is not uncommon to us. We can get full meal deals, or we can just buy the sandwich. We can get a full car detail, or we can just get a wash. This is not unfamiliar to us, but somehow I have found that in the real estate related industry, we go a little brain dead thinking that, you know, all brokerages are the same, or at the very least, we've now seen the rise of two models. You're sort of like 100% commission models, which work off service fees and a variety of fees. And then we have a quarter of your full service, quote unquote, models, which even that is like way too general and dull of a phrase, full service. Well, what type of service? What does the full mean? And of course, now that this, you're right, elevated conversation for consumers saying, aren't all agents the same? Aren't all commissions the same? No, of course not. And what we should be doing is using our prior knowledge about all the different variations of what brokerages look like to be the beginning and the seed of conversation to see, oh no, see, I exist in this A versus world or B world or C world. And let me show you how the differences are in the consumer landscape too. And so that's a really good way for us to think. We need to educate ourselves better internally so that we can then use that to educate our consumers as well.
Yeah. And I think that that's really the environment that we're in right now is really where that stems from, right? Is that we have taken for granted internally what we know to be true about the industry, that there are different levels of service and different fees for that service throughout the real estate industry, but we have not done a great job in communicating that to the consumer. And so this is an opportunity for us to communicate that, to really raise the level of professionalism in our industry, and to for the consumer to really understand, first of all, what is the value that we provide? And then secondly, how we get paid. And so I'm really, you know, it's probably not the way that I would have asked that we get there, but I'm really excited about this next phase in our industry.
You are highlighting, I think, a larger truism that we struggle to put words to, but if we know is true in our gut, and that is you definitely get what you pay for. No doubt. You referenced that some brokerage models give less, charge less. Some give more, charge more. So we know that. We get what we pay for. But also, I think none of us in the world are great at everything. There's always something we're not very good at. One of the things I'm not very good at is fixing cars. I like to tinker when I was younger, but I've just fallen out of it. I'm just not good at it. And so for me, when some car person is really good at their job, but not just fixing and turning wrenches, but explaining what they're doing, or maybe even how complicated it is, or kind of parentheses, how I can't probably do it myself, all of a sudden, all of my concerns about cost just start to go out the window.
Sure.
Because what they're providing for me is such a valuable service. I'm like, please take my money. Please take my money and fix this car for me because I can't do it myself, or I don't want to do it myself, or I thought it was easy and now I realize it's complicated. And so when we somehow interact with a service person or a product and we innately figure, where is price and my perception of value? We make a judgment. We might have a perception of value problem, but if it is the right perception of value, that's going to be an easy judgment. Oh man, that's a great deal, might be something we say, or oh no, I would never pay that. And so I do think the consumers are dealing with one half of they're judging wrongly because they don't have a proper perception of value. But I also think the other half is that the community, our brothers and sisters out there, haven't really had the words for themselves and are now not able to use those words to explain their value. And I think anytime that there's scrutiny, we professionals should be excited. Like, ooh, someone's kind of looking at me. Well, let me tell you how great I am, but not in like a self-promotion way, but like I've worked hard to be here and I've put the effort in. So let me share it with you and educate you. That should excite us. And so some of the response where it's a little bit more of a whine, perhaps, than an excitement around this settlement, I'm like, come on, people, let's get excited about proving our value. And you got to put in the work. There's work to be done.
Yeah. And I think that is true for every other business.
Yes.
Across the country.
Yes.
Is that you are paid based on the value that you provide. And that is the opportunity that within our industry that we have failed the public at large. Like we have failed to discuss our value. We take care of the transaction for you, but we don't talk about all the things that we do in that transaction.
Yes.
And all of the stressful conversations that we may have behind the scenes that you're not privy to and that you never know about because we just work it out. And so I think we have a real opportunity to learn to articulate our value and then demonstrate our value to the consumer. It's not how I would have gotten here, but it's a great opportunity. And I can think of two examples in my lifetime where this has been proven to me. Going back to running a business, when I had to hire a CPA to actually go through all of my accounts, they have access to all of my accounts and they reconcile those accounts every month, right? Mm-hmm. That's not cheap. But let me tell you,
it's valuable.
Totally. At the end of the year where I don't have a shoebox worth of receipts.
Oh yeah.
And so that is one example. Another example is, investment for retirement. Mm. Like when I first hired my financial planner, I questioned every charge. I was probably not the most pleasant consumer that he has run into. And now I'm like, I see what they do for me and the value they've provided in my retirement accounts and the proof's in the pudding, right? When we talk about, you talked about like, meals, you can get a la carte or you can get like the full size, supersized meal, That's a great example. And the one I use is that I can buy a t-shirt at Target or I can buy a t-shirt at Nordstrom. It's still a t-shirt. It doesn't matter, but there's always going to be the consumer who wants the level of service and quality that's provided by Nordstrom's that isn't provided by Target. I love Target. Like I go there a lot, but I'm absolutely not buying my house there.
Right. I think that we can start to look inward and say, well, what is it that I'm doing? But not just what is it that I'm doing, but how can I communicate this better? You mentioned this great thing of like that there's all these stressful phone calls and these problems that get worked out by your listing agent or by your buyer's agent. I think sometimes the community has done too well to keep the stress away from the client and has accidentally kind of nipped themselves in the butt a little bit because they're like, oh, well, that was a smooth experience. Yeah, because I literally threw my body on the railroad track so that the train could go over. But in reality, the client wasn't aware of it. And so it kind of lost a little bit of its punch, of that value. And so I saw a broker a couple months back write out this incredible laundry list. I mean, just hilariously long laundry list of all the little minute actions that go into managing a real estate transaction. And it was a really great thing to kind of read through, kind of a little ad nauseum, ad infinitum sort of a situation, but to realize, oh, you're right. There are a lot of little things. And honestly, I'm in this world, but I don't know if I could have written those all down. And I certainly know that your average consumer could not have. And so without knowing all of those things, it's hard to really round out the value. However, value is not an objective principle that hangs in space. It is something that is agreed upon between two parties. And if you are someone like this person was, who writes out all these 100 items of value that you do as a buyer's agent, and the buyer, whoever they are out in the world, says, well, I disagree that 30 of those are actually valuable. I think you're doing them. Great for you, ? But like, I don't really care. Well, we have to then reset as professionals our understanding of not only what are the actions that we're doing, but what is valuable to the consumer. I used to incorporate a little nugget of value early on in my business that I was like kind of shouting at the rooftops. This is so great. You should love this. Look at us. We're so great. We incorporate this thing. And then I realized about a year in early in business, nobody cared. Nobody was reading it. Nobody was watching. Nobody was interested. It was not something of perceptible value to the consumer. And so I eliminated it. And I was a little sore because I liked it and I'd put the effort in. But ultimately, I had to recognize the consumer may be uneducated in elements, but they are not necessarily wrong. It is a conversation between consumer and professional to arrive at the idea of like, well, what should we then be doing to serve? We serve at the pleasure of the consumer, right? But what do they need? Sometimes they know how to talk about it. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. And again, I think that is really where we have failed as an industry, is to communicate, and not just communicate the value, to your point, not just communicate the value that we think we provide, but what value are you not getting that you need that we can provide? Tell me about your last transaction that you had. What were the pain points in that transaction? What is it that you need me to do that you didn't get the last time that you did this?
That is good.
And not just being the, like, my buyer representation agreement and my listing presentation should not just be about me and how great I am and the things that I do, but it should be more about me listening to the consumer and saying, what are your goals in this transaction and what do you need from me?
Hey everyone, it's Jake, director for the Business of Homes podcast. I hope you've been enjoying today's episode, starting with the understanding that you are running your own business, the different levels of service brokerages can provide, and why not demonstrating your value as an agent has become a huge problem. When we return, Michael and Kevin dive into how HGTV has created a version of real estate that's not real life, a reminder that the contract is the most important piece of the real estate transaction, and their final thoughts on how the settlement should make you feel. You don't want to miss it. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Business of Homes Pod, where you can interact with us and see some great bite-sized pieces from all of our episodes. For you listeners out there, did you know our entire podcast are filmed and are on our YouTube channel? Check it out next time you want to see our amazing guests tell their stories. And are you currently watching this episode in video format? Don't forget to follow us on your preferred audio streaming service to take us with you on the go. Lastly, do you have any feedback or want to suggest someone for the show? Email us at thebusinessofhomespodcast@gmail.com. Please enjoy the rest of today's episode with Kevin Wilson. Let's get back to it.
Let's just acknowledge the difficulty of trying to run a business, which inherently means automation, repetition, trying to like streamline your efforts. So you're trying to do everything the same way because you're trying to improve everything. But then you need it to have this essentially custom piece every time so that it can feel relevant to each individual person that you work with. So then you're kind of like herky jerky a little bit. But I hope you're doing that. And man, I hope all you listeners are rewinding and listening to what he just said, because this idea of starting out your professional relationship with questions. What do you need? What has been your past experience? Where did things go wrong that I can maybe go right this time for you? That's a wonderful way to start off. Are you incorporating that in your business? That's great.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I do that, right? So there's a point where you talk about what are the things that you hope, what are your dreams in this transaction? What does the perfect transaction look like for you? And having that conversation with sellers and making sure that sometimes that comes at a cost, right? Like, so if I want my listing to be promoted everywhere. I want it on the internet. I want it in print advertising. I want it everywhere. There's a cost associated with that to the listing agent or to the seller. And, you know, who's going to, I think that, you know, in the environment that we're in right now, you'll start having more conversations about who is going to pay for that based on the compensation that's being offered.
Okay. So I think you're touching on almost an entirely separate conversation, but it's one I'm dying to have. And that is, why are the professional real estate agents paying for costs associated with the transaction when there is no guarantee of like compensation or success? Like, I've always been really uncomfortable with the fact that real estate agents put all this effort in. You know, not everyone's doing like a stellar job every minute, but like there's a lot of good work that goes into this. There's no guarantee of payment. I don't live in that world. I'm more of a service business guy where I'm like, dude, we rendered you a service. Like, we're getting paid. And so I want agents to almost like get paid along the way, because I feel like that's way more fair. And I don't love the idea of you having to eat all these costs with just a big dice roll gamble of whether you're getting paid at the end.
Right. Right. And I think that's part of the conversation, right? Because what we see in the age of influencers and the age of social media, and even the age of HGTV, where you show three houses and you get to choose one, that is not real life.
Fake.
That is fake, not news. Fake news. That is not what we do in real life.
Right.
You know, there are times that we work with buyers or sellers for 6 months or a year or longer. And if it's a buyer or a seller, like that transaction may never close. Like, you may never be paid on that transaction at all. And yet you have these upfront costs, whether it's with a buyer, you know, the gas, the time, the countless number of counseling and conversations that you have with that buyer, the number of conversations you have with the lender, trying to provide the buyer with the scenarios based on today's mortgage rates or based on any number of different factors. And then if you look at the listing side of it, you pay out of pocket for professional photos, for these professional lock boxes where it's not just like a code you can like scroll on that anybody can, you know, figure out what that code is over time. And so you have these upfront expenses, and it really is. It goes back to our very first point that we were talking about here, is that it is about being a business owner.
Yep.
And not about being an employee. Mm-hmm. Like, these are costs that I absorb regardless of my success. And the reality is if I'm not good at this, if I'm not delivering on what I submit to you that my value is that I'm not going to be in business very long, because I have more input than or output than I have input. Mm. And so it's a really great question that you bring up there when we talk about, you know, the out-of-pocket cost.
I think perhaps the consumers are maybe most confused about this point, because I think that there is certainly a confusion in the wording. Like, oh, agents are earning these commissions. And sort of this word commission, it just kind of doesn't mean anything, and it means everything somehow all at the same time. Because the way we're talking about it, like, it's a business, right? That's like revenue, like top line revenue. What you're earning as a commission is top line revenue, but you have expenses and time and gas and all these sorts of things. And so I almost want them to get a better line item receipt of things. It's like, well, this is the hours I put in. Here's my dollars per hour. And then the discounted, you know, rate, kind of like a medical bill. And then here's like the money I spent on photos and staging and all this stuff. And then here's the time I spent like making sure that your mortgage person didn't completely explode, you know, or whatever. And so a better line item, they might be able to pick out easily all those hard expenses and be like, oh, that agent was paid out this much, but they had to eat that much. And then, oh, here's their earning. So I almost want to draw out this idea of like earning and expenses against revenue. But now we're just kind of all lumping it into a commission conversation. I like it separate because I think the consumer is like, oh, I get it. I earn this many dollars an hour because I do these things. Oh, I see this. They earn this many dollars an hour because they do these things. Oh, it makes a lot more sense to me. It just feels very clouded right now.
Sure. And I think if you look at the 1.5 million members of NAR and you look at the statistics, the average realtor makes less than $50,000 a year.
Because they're part-time in it or something.
Well, and because it's not what everybody thinks that it is. When you start talking about expenses being removed from the top line of everything that you're earning,
right.
and not to say that there aren't realtors who are significantly more successful than that, but that's on average what an average realtor makes, which is probably below the average income, you know, nationwide. And so to like maybe itemize the services that we're providing, I think that goes back to the value conversation we're talking about. Like, we have to itemize that on the front end. These are all the things I'm going to do for you. And this is the professional fee that I charge to do them.
So there is a danger to itemizing. It's not a silver bullet. You heard it here. It's not a silver bullet. Because what itemizing does is it does educate the consumer and it does kind of empower them. But sometimes they start to wield that power against you a little bit. I've had this experience where someone will come to us and say, can you render us a service? And we say yes. And then we're sort of saying, in our professional view, this is kind of the service that you need. And this is the fee that we're going to charge. And they're like, well, but what if we did like 10% or 20% less? Is it going to be 10 or 20% less price? And I'm like, no, you can't just like start dividing my pie up, removing pie pieces, and then fashion your own fee out of it. And maybe that's what the future of real estate looks like. I don't really know. But I do like this idea of engaging in a more clear, like you said, transparent conversation, because then an agent might be able to say, these are the removable pieces, because I can excise those out and it doesn't hurt me. And these are the not removable pieces. This is where the price can move, and this is where the price can't move. And like, that sounds much better, but it is interesting because I like this. This is going more in a traditional business route. It's pushing the whole industry away from, and I might get pinned for this one, but like, it's definitely grown into more of an organically influencer oriented industry rather than a business entrepreneur sort of type industry. You tend to sort of say, oh, people who are in development or maybe, you know, the construction sort of building something out of nothing, or more the entrepreneur side of real estate. And maybe those who are the agents of conveyance in real estate are more kind of the influencer side. When in reality, that's not true 100% across the board. That's not true at all. But that's the perception, and getting us more into like a, man, that real estate agents are like a hardworking professional, and they're cutting themselves a niche out there, and they're really serving their population. And I mean, we should be saying that from a mile away, not kind of like, I don't know, man, you know, which is kind of, I think, where people are.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, 2021, 2022 really lent itself to that perception from the consumer because there was so much demand in the marketplace because interest rates were below 3%.
Crazy.
And so from the consumer's perspective, it was very easy to sell a home. And on some level, that was true. What is not easy is that contract. There's an 11-page contract that has a lot of pitfalls and complexities that when you have a realtor representing your interest on that, we do that every day. Mm-hmm. And this is the largest financial investment that most people are going to make in their life, and they're going to make it multiple times. And from my perspective, I'm never going to risk that with saying, I can do this on my own. Or, you know, there's a service where I can pay a flat fee and just have someone list my property on the MLS, but all the phone calls come to me. Personally, I'm not going to do that because I understand that there are professionals in the workplace who do that absolutely every day. Just like Michael, I'm not going to inspect my own home.
Right. We all have the ability to do things. Maybe there are other people who can do them better than us.
Right. 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 That do them on a daily basis.
Yes.
And so there's value in that. You're not just paying me for the time that it took me to sell your home. You're paying me for the years of experience that I've accumulated to get to the point to be able to sell your house in that way.
And that's a great reminder that the contract over and over, year after year, continues to be tip of the spear, arguably the most important piece of the business puzzle of this sort of real estate agent experience. And, you know, we easily see it from the consumer side. Oh, the consumer wouldn't try to navigate this 11-page, very complicated, ever-changing document because there is an element of like legal understanding that is maybe beyond them. And yet I find that some section of the real estate agent population chooses to not really go deep in the weeds on the contract. They continue to need assistance further and further year after year. And it really is an easy differentiator because I've also seen the other side. People who are like, well, if this is the thing that's going to be where things are won and lost, well, then I'm going to know every word, every line. I'm going to be able to call it, well, that's in line 427, you know, or whatever. And those people who are almost kind of becoming like paralegal professionals in some way. I mean, don't quote me on that one, but like, I think that's really, I mean, if you're looking here and you're a listener and you're looking for one way you can begin to immediately differentiate yourself, regardless of number of transactions or years of experience, the contract, 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 get to know it, sleep with it underneath your pillow, read it over breakfast, read it, know every single blank area that you have to fill in and the importance of what filling in things is going to do and change the contract. That's it right there. I mean, that's the beginning of a larger puzzle, but certainly where a lot of value can be provided.
Absolutely. You know, knowledge is power, right?
Totally.
And if you know what that contract says, you can use that to your advantage 100% of the time. And unfortunately, there have been instances where maybe somebody didn't understand it to say exactly what it does say. And although that contract is a pre-printed like legal contract that was written by attorneys at Tennessee Realtors, there are aspects of a transaction that are not covered in that contract. For example, you know, if I want my seller to have occupancy of the home for a certain amount of time, like I have to know as a professional how to write that into the contract. So there are many opportunities where a buyer or a seller want additional language that is not in the contract that they rely on their professional representation to put that in there and that it's going to stick.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's important to, when you're thinking about your most important investment, to have somebody who has that experience and that knowledge to kind of walk you through it.
Yeah. In the world of construction, we think of the code as like the rules about how to build a code. But the real name of it is like it's like a model code. It's just meant to be the starting spot. And the contract is kind of a model contract in some ways. It's just the starting spot. If you use it, sure, it's the bare minimum. But there's definitely ways to sharpen it and to increase its value to a seller or to a buyer in such a way where that is the best possible way to help your client. And of course, that's the responsibility of each agent. And so you're right, that knowledge, which goes us back to the brokerage conversation, because not every brokerage is going to have personnel or components of that brokerage that are there to help you as a safety net or an educational piece. And so more your full service brokerages are probably going to have better opportunities to teach you, to protect you, to watch over you. And maybe your flat fee 100% models are going to be a little less. And so it's interesting if you're new to real estate and you're kind of eyeing those 100% models because you feel like you need every dollar, be careful because maybe some of those safety nets and frameworks aren't quite there for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the choices that you make, at least for me, I can speak to my own experience. The choices that I make early on in my career are going to dictate the rest of my career.
Mm.
And so where I chose in the beginning of my career has certainly shaped not only any success that I've had in real estate, but it has also helped shape me as being a part of a leadership team, you know, within our local association. And so the value that I have received from making the choices that I made early on has multiplied itself immensely. Like, you know, yes, I paid a little bit more to be a part of that brokerage, but I have gotten that money back tenfold.
I mean, you were at Village for a lot of years.
I was at Village.
Bobby Doreen, who literally teaches the Bible of contracts, was your broker for many years.
Many years.
Yeah. Shout out to Bobby Doreen.
Yes. Yes.
Killing it on contracts.
And she sat in that office every day from at least 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And there was always a line outside the door. And when you walked in, you were treated like you were the only person who wanted to see her that day. And so she was such a support and so much knowledge about the forms and the contracts that it really did set those agents up for success. And Bobby is one of my mentors. I absolutely credit her with every success that I've had in real estate. But there are also other great brokers out there. Mm-hmm. And so that's still available in the marketplace. But if you are a new agent, I would say that where you choose to go, it's really important.
It matters. I'm not sure that I'm aware of, and maybe this is more of an association thing. Maybe, I don't know, there's a need rising in the market for better ways to compare brokerages. You know, we almost need like a Facebook for brokerages so we can know what they are and what their pieces are. I want to see, my encouragement to the community here listening is that be someone who is judicious and scrutinize. Start conversations with your peers. There's no such thing as too many questions about the nuances of value that you get from a brokerage or like what people's experience has been. And remember, everybody's going to have a different angle on it. So you got to get down to those core things, not just what the splits are, but really what that transactional value is with your broker.
Absolutely. And if nothing else, what I would leave here today is that don't start that conversation about splits or money. Start that conversation about value.
Mm.
What is the value that you're providing me for hanging my license here, but then also what's the flip side of that? What is the value I'm bringing to you? Mm-hmm. What is the value that I bring to your office, as an independent contractor here? Like, we often think, and I had this conversation earlier today, that people walk in, with this idea that they're choosing where they want to go. It has to be a good fit for everybody. And so not only what is the value you provide, but most importantly, what is the culture of your office?
Mm. Yeah. A broker said to me recently that he has way too many conversations about splits and not enough conversations about following some of the encouragement and the guidelines and guardrails that he's trying to build as sort of the cultural sort of wave and push that he's pushing his agents. You know, he's like, I wish we'd talk more about finding success in the things that I'm recommending rather than like, you know, how can I, you know, give up more of the commission so that you can make more, Mr. Agent. And so, yeah, I think that's missing. I think that's missing, and that's a bummer. Yeah. And I think this settlement, to sort of take it full circle, is something that can lead you to an emotional response. No doubt, whatever that emotion is going to be. And you have a pick of the litter of all the different emotions available to you. And this settlement should not lead you to like feeling sorry for yourself or even outsized emotions of like depression, sadness, and anger. And those might be something natural, like chemical, that you might feel. But my encouragement is that this should feel like an exciting challenge in which to overcome, or even, like, dare I say, prove everybody wrong kind of a thing, you know, hopefully in a good way. It should be something that leads us to sharpening our pencils, sharpening our chisels, whatever the analogy is. Like, we should be excited to have these conversations. And honestly, it might lead us to places of like, who am I? Where am I going? What do I want? God forbid. Because maybe if the industry you wanted was more Instagram focused and now the industry is saying you have to be more business focused and you don't like that, that's okay. There's no judgment there. You can do whatever your heart desires, but this industry is definitely going more in the direction of saying business acumen is important. Education is important. Relationship with your broker and your consumer is important. Having the language in which to have those conversations is important. And honestly, be aware of your MLS and your association and what they're doing to assist you. And, you know, to kind of sort of wrap things up, you are the president of the local association, and you didn't just wake up one day and be the president. How did you change from being the everyday agent to becoming president? Because it wasn't an overnight thing.
Yeah, it definitely was not. I was a realtor for many years before I got involved with the association. And it started by just becoming a member of a committee and just showing up and participating and learning more about the value that's provided within the association. And you don't get here or anywhere by yourself. Hmm. And so having mentors and leaders who really gave me opportunities to incrementally step up the responsibility that I had within the organization. And so eventually that became, you know, the chair of a committee. And then I made the decision, the very, somewhat scary decision to run for the board. Hmm. And so now you're asking for 7,000 members to vote for you. To be a member of the board and not knowing what that outcome is going to be. But what I've learned since then and as part of leadership is that you get zero of the opportunities you don't try for. Yes. And so I was able to be elected to the board. And then subsequently the next year was interviewed with a nominating committee, and they found that I would be a good fit for executive committee. And, it has been a 5-year journey since then. I'll be on nominating for 5 more years after I am the president. And so it is not a short stint. Nobody said, hey, there's an NAR settlement. Kevin Wilson should be president. I did not select these circumstances. But I am. Again, another thing, I would not have wanted to get here this way, but it has been a great opportunity to be in front of members and brokers and listen to their concerns and answer their questions, the questions that we can answer at this point. And so it has just been honestly an honor to be in the position at this particular moment in time. And to your point, Jaron Springer, who is our CEO, who I can't imagine doing this alongside anyone else, often says, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Mm. And so to your point on, how you can view this, like in that first week, absolutely fear, lots of questions, serious concerns about the future of the industry. But you also got to find a turning point from that to start asking the question is, how do I get curious about this? How do I make this work in my business? And the reality, Michael, is not a lot is changing. There are really two major changes here. One is that there will no longer be a unilateral offer of compensation in the MLS, but it can be offered anywhere else. The seller can still offer compensation to the buyer broker. There's nothing in the settlement that precludes that. It's just saying that we can't put it in the MLS as a unilateral, no matter what, this is the commission is being paid. The second thing is that we have to have a buyer representation agreement signed by the buyer before we show the first house. That's a big deal nationally because more than 30 states do not use buyer broker representation agreements. Wow. Yeah. Tennessee, we've always used one.
Right.
And so we already have that. And so this is really not a new practice for us. There are some minor changes in that, in how it will be new, but it is not a significant change. And so I have to give a shout out to Tennessee Realtors and the Forms Committee. They have been on top of this game for years and set us up for success in this moment. And so I think that there's a real opportunity to look and see, how can I make this work for my business and how can I gain market share based on what I choose to learn and the knowledge I choose to gain and move forward with this.
I hope more buyer's agents are willing to take a stand for their value and say, my buyer's representation agreement is going to include a clause around, you know, valuing my time. And if we end up at more of a question mark or a stalemate on moving forward for a transaction, then my time is still has a representative value and a payout of X, Y, and Z. I'd love to see more listing agreements include expiry clauses that include recompense for expenses paid out. I'd like to see consumers be made more aware of the work that agents put in, and agents kind of stick up for themselves a little bit more and not just say, I'm just going to take all this and then I'm just going to take the beating if it doesn't work out. Like, I know I want to see, I don't want to see buyers break buyer's agency agreements because they just kind of fell out of love or something, or listing folks, you know, sellers just let things expire because they found somebody else who will do it differently. Or I want to see things stick because there's real relationship and real value represented. And so I hope anybody listening here will continue to take a sharp pencil to those agreements that they're writing and be bold. Your consumers do want to compensate you. They probably care about you if you're working with them. And don't just think that they're worried about that whole thing. They want to have an adult conversation with you about compensation. And I hope you'll be confident enough to do it. And call Kevin if you have questions.
Great.
Kevin, this has been great. If you guys are want to really figure out if your business is a business, jump into leadership, because if it's not a business, you're going to struggle and you're going to need some frameworks to make it a business. But leadership obviously has a huge opportunity of putting you in the right rooms. You want to be in the room where it happens, right?
There you go.
Putting in the right room with the right people, your education level will just explode. And obviously you get to give back, which is a big part of being a realtor. And so thank you for being here. Very exciting.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Guys, this has been the Business of Homes podcast. I'm Michael Conrad. I love sharing these stories and helping encourage our real estate agent community. I hope that you guys will continue to listen in here or wherever you get your free range organic podcasts, and hit subscribe and stick with us. We'll catch you next time.
Hey everyone, Jake again, director for the Business of Homes podcast. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. A huge thank you to Kevin Wilson for being a part of the podcast. Go follow him on Instagram at Our House Nashville and let him know how much you enjoyed their story. Don't forget to subscribe on your preferred listening platform and make sure to follow us on Instagram as well at The Business of Homes Pod. Do you have any feedback or want to suggest someone for the show? Email us at thebusinessofhomespodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you soon.